This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Okay, Lombardi Line presented, of course, by BetMGM. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. Thursday night football tonight. We'll get to that in just a bit. San Francisco either laying 3 or, of course, you can take Seattle catching the 3.5. Got plenty of stats and trends to back up that matchup tonight between the division rivals. But, Michael, I wanted to start here, give you an opportunity. I know a friend of yours. It's kind of been fun the past, not fun, that's not the right word to use, but it's been heartwarming to see the clips. Yeah. And hear the remembrances everybody's had to say about Mike Leach, who passed away unexpectedly at the age of 61. Really, he was revolutionary in what he did to the game of football. Of course, the heart condition led to his passing at 61. I want to get your take on a friend of yours and coach Mike Leach.
You know, it's certainly sad to see someone so young, 61 years old, lose. And Mike Leach is a shining example of why curiosity remains the greatest trait we can have in our lives. Because when you're curious, you search for learning, you search for meaning, and you continue to stay young. And Mike was that. He was unorthodox in everything he did. I mean, I've spent a lot of time around him, and I still can't figure out how he did it. You know, people say how, you know, he would walk to work. He wouldn't come to work till maybe 1 o'clock, sometimes 11, maybe 2 o'clock. You know, he'd work all night. It was all different. You know, he beat to his own drummer. And he was, as I wrote about for the Daily Coach, he was very authentic in his leadership style. He wasn't trying to be anybody but Mike Leach. And so when I spent time around him, he was teaching a class up at Washington State on strategy and leadership. And it was fascinating how he, and it was the most popular class on campus. I mean, kids enrolled in it. And I got to sit in it for a couple times and listen to him talk about how he approached the game, and misinformation can be valuable as information. And it was just a pleasure to be around. He thought differently, and he wasn't trying to just be weird to be weird. There was a motive. There was obviously a reason for what he did, and he's going to be missed. He was a good friend, and I would talk to him on the phone quite a bit when he would take those walks into work, and we would share ideas, and he was intrigued by pro football. And I thought he's proven that he could win anywhere. I mean, look at the two programs he won, Texas Tech out at Lubbock, not an easy job, Washington State, Pullman, not an easy job, and down at Mississippi State, Starkville, not an easy job. Kind of off the beaten track programs, but yet he won everywhere he was.
I love what you said about him. He wasn't trying to be weird. He just was eccentric. He just was genuine. You know, it was who he was innately, and you got the real dude in Mike Leach. When I say the air raid offense, Hal Mumme, I think, hired him somewhere in Iowa, got his start there. When I say the air raid, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
The first thing I think of is how he would vertical set his tackles. So that, you know, like they would just back up, and then the line splits. But with Mike, when he was at Texas Tech to when he went to Washington State to when he went to the Southeast Conference, he adapted and modified. He wasn't just, okay, I'm going to run my stuff and not change. Mike would put out a new album. Now, it looked like the same album, and it might have had the same rhythm and beats, but it was different, and it adjusted it, which is critical for people to understand. And also I think of Michael Crabtree, who was not highly recruited, and yet Mike takes him as a one-star and turns him into a first-round draft pick of the 49ers because he was really a good player. And that was Mike. Mike didn't care what other people thought. Mike cared what he thought. That's a great lesson for us all to learn. It's a lesson in betting, really. It's a lesson in betting. It's like, I don't care what you think about the Packer-Ram game or the Jets-Lions game. Here's what I think. I'm convicted to it, and I'm going to stick with it. I might be wrong, but I'm going down this road. And then when I'm wrong, I'm going to learn from it.
I think what stood out to me is you mentioned he's 61 years old, but I was looking up something, and I saw his date of birth, and he was born in 1961. I'm like, that doesn't feel old to me.
He's 2 years older than me. I'm 2 years older than him, so that's what's even more painful.
That's not old. You know, 61, gone too soon. Mike Leach, you hate when you – anyway, that's terrible for his family and you and others that are close to him. Awful loss of Mike Leach. Okay, we transition. It's not easy to transition off of that, but let's give it a go. you know, San Francisco tonight, it's a bit of a scheduling anomaly, and Elliott points it out. This will be their first true road game since October 30th at the Rams. Remember, sandwiched in between this long homestand, they went down to Mexico City. So, and this is a place that Kyle Shanahan, he said, quote, "I don't think I've ever been anywhere louder than Seattle. It's a big difference playing there. He's got a rookie starting on the road. Again, I'll set you up on the number. You can find a 3.5 if you want to take Seattle. You can find a 3 if you want to lay 49ers.
I think to me, you know, this is one of those where I think you got to take the 3.5. I think it's really, really hard. I think it's really hard to – this will be a close game because this is one of those where you have to understand that this is a custard last stand game for Seattle, and there's more motivation and the bad taste in their mouth losing to Carolina, you know, not playing their best game and letting Carolina walk into their stadium and beat them. I think that's going to playing early helps. It's the same thing with the Rams. I mean, the Rams, you know, that Baker Mayfield, strange things happen on Thursday night. I think San Francisco's the better team, but I would want Seattle in 3.5.
I don't know if Seattle was caught looking ahead because Carolina was very good in that matchup, but a 30-24 loss to Carolina. Seattle's lost 3 of 4. They're 7-6. They're battling for their playoff lives. Geno wasn't great. 21 of 36, 264, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks against Carolina. Here's his self-assessment.
We've been out there, you know, just going after it, you know, really being aggressive. And to me, I think I've been too aggressive as of late, and so I've got to kind of get back to what I was doing early on, which was just taking what they give me and allowing, you know, us to have a complementary football team and we all play together and not feel like we're just trying to push the envelope or trying to, you know, push our limits and see what we can do, because we know what we can do, but we got to stay on schedule.
Here's what worries me, Michael, for Geno tonight. Carolina, as you know, outgained them on the ground 223-46. Now, Kenneth Walker is going to be back for tonight for Seattle, so that's huge. However, San Francisco, they've got the best run D in the league at 75.1 yards per game, only 3.4 a carry. Also, when Geno's back in that pocket, those young tackles in Cross and Lucas, you think Bosa's not going to have fun just squaring off against those young tackles?
Yeah. Well, I think Shane Waldron knows that too, right? So I think he's going into the game saying to himself, "Hey, I gotta protect my tackles. I gotta get this ball out quick."
Sure.
And the speed of San Francisco's defense really makes it hard because you throw it and they tackle so damn well that it puts a lot of pressure on you, and you have to find a way to run the ball with some success against them. You just can't go in there and make it a 40-pass game. But we said that about Brady last week. We said, look, if Brady goes out there and throws it 50 times, he's going to lose, and he did. I mean, Kansas City was able to run the ball against them. They had 112 yards, but they didn't really run the ball. They didn't try to run. They threw the ball to then run it. I think that's kind of what you have to do. You have to mix in the run. You can't go in there and say, we're going to run the ball 50 times. You got to go out there and say, we're going to mix in some runs here to slow the game down a little bit. So we're not always in third and 12, third and 14. Because the more of those we get into, the more chances we're going to turn the ball over. I mean, look, the last 2 weeks, you know, they've turned the ball over 7 times, the 49ers. They're good at doing that, you know, and that's where you play into their hands. I mean, they haven't given up 20 first downs in a game since Kansas City when they had none of their players. Think about that, Patrick.
Yep. No, and San Francisco's been dominant. I mean, they dominated Brady and the Bucs on both sides of the line of scrimmage. 2 picks off of Brady. Remember, they dominated the Seahawks. You and I talked a little bit during the break, 27-7. I don't think Seattle had an offensive touchdown in that Week 2 matchup. That's when Lance went down for the 49ers and Garoppolo stepped in. And as Elliott points out, even with that 27-7 loss at San Francisco in Week 2, Seattle is still 17-4 versus the 49ers since 2012. And that includes, Michael, a 10-1 mark at home for Seattle against San Francisco. Carroll's been awesome at home. We know this.
Yeah, and I think you can't downplay the divisional rivalry, right? You can't down, just like you can't downplay Washington and New York Giants, you know. And that line has kind of gone in a different direction, but you can't downplay it. You really can't. I mean, these are important. These teams know each other really well. They're familiar with each other. They know the matchups. They know the one-on-ones. And I think it's really kind of one of those situations where, you know, they're going to get Seattle's best punch. Whatever that best punch is, they're going to get it.
Also, Not going to see, to that point on the under, which is at 43, and Will Hill gave out the under earlier here on the Lombardi line, probably not going to see very many exotic packages. You mentioned the familiarity with in-division, but also short week. So, you know, let's get in there. A business like, if you're Shanahan, let's wrap up the division, a business like run the football, play great D, and get the hell out of there.
Well, I think Geno kind of told us what the game plan is. Geno said it in the first person, I need to be more careful with the football. But I think what he's saying is as a team, we can't turn the ball over. Well, our defense isn't great at creating turnovers, and we can't turn it over. And so we've got to be really careful. And I think getting Walker back will help. At least they can mix in some runs. At least they can do some things where they can get some easy throws. And he's one thing about Geno now, against a team like San Francisco, you have to be very accurate. You have to be, because they're going to be around, even when they're in zone, they're around the ball because they're so fast. But Geno's very accurate, and he'll put the ball in the right spot all the time. And he's really good at handling all the distractions around him. His eye level stays down the field. So, you know, they've got enough skill players, particularly, to create some matchups that they can favorable for Seattle.
BetMGM reporting 64% of the bets on San Francisco, yet we're starting to see that number creep back a little bit here to the Seahawks, so maybe a little sharp money or
Patrick, I love low ticket count, high money. 37% on my board, ticket count, 55% of the money.
Yep.
Seattle.
I think we might, I wouldn't say close a blanket three across the board. I think you're going to start to see a couple more threes pop up here as opposed to the three and a halves, because I see all the juice is headed to three. We're coming back. 45 minutes. Samich and Palm on the Lombardi line next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks, also the sponsor for many years of The Lombardi Line. Visit BetMGM.com or download the app. Remember, that app has been reconfigured. What does that mean? You want to go in-game. It's very responsive. They've done a great job getting that app ready to go. You got to be 21 years or older, 1-800-GAMBLER. Again, betmgm.com or simply download the BetMGM app. We got you back here. 45 minutes on a Thursday of Samich into Palm. Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher. We welcome in professional handicapper Mike Samich, who joins us, racingdudes.com. Remember, if you're into horse racing, make sure you check out Samich as well. However, tonight we've got San Francisco at Seattle. Again, that number's kind of dancing, the 3, 3.5. 43, I got one shop showing 43.5 on the total. But as we say, hi, Mike, we'll start here. Your play on this game tonight, 49ers over 148.5 rushing as a team.
Yeah, this one was a tough one to handicap. I originally set the side at Niners minus 3.2, so this 3.5-3 move is perfect, or the number is perfect in my mind. I would consider taking a shot with Seattle at 3.5, but you know, at a juiced 3, which is what we're seeing in a lot of places, I have no interest in taking San Francisco on that side. However, when you kind of break down the game and you look at where you expect teams to have success, I got to point to this San Francisco rushing game. And with Purdy being injured, possibly having Johnson starting, I think they're going to lean on it even more in this spot. Go back to the first game these two teams played, a 27-7 win for San Francisco. You saw 46 carries for the Niners versus just 24 passes. I think you're going to have a very similar game plan. And when you look at Seattle, and specifically how this defense has been doing recently, they have really struggled to stop the run. Giving up 2,000 yards on the season, that's the second highest total of any team in the NFL. And in the last 4 weeks specifically, they've given up 160 or more rushing yards to teams that don't run the ball particularly well. You've got Carolina in that. You've got the Raiders in there. But then you also have the Rams, and even the Bucks put up 160 against this defense. So I think that the advantage here from a betting perspective is to pass on the sides and look at some of the props that you can play. One that I like as well, Mason, a rookie running back for San Francisco. I think I'm not a big DFS guy. But if I'm going to play DFS tonight, I'll probably put a captain and crew lineup in and put him as the captain. He got 11 carries last week. He's averaged over 5 yards a carry the last 3 weeks. I think he picks up some of that workload because they're not going to want to go crazy with McCaffrey. And you got to put those Deebo Samuel's carries somewhere. So I think Mason's interesting as a captain and crew guy, but I think the San Francisco team has a lot of success on the ground and goes for at least 150 tonight.
You know, I think so, too, and everybody's focused on the run game. But I think one of the things when you watch Seattle is there's a lot of passes that they allow to be completed. They rank 24th in the league in incomplete passes as a defense, which means that there's windows to throw the ball in. And if you're Brock Purdy and you can get the ball to some of these receivers into these windows, which we saw them do last week, assuming that the protection is good, which, again, you know, when you look at it, I mean, this is now Seattle's 10th in sack per pass play on the season percentage. So they can get some, generate some pressure. But if they protect, you know, I think Purdy could make a couple easy throws. I don't expect him to throw it more than 20 times. I agree with you. I think they're going to run it. I think they're going to save McCaffrey as well.
Yeah, this Seattle defense has been really interesting to me all year. They were significantly better than what I expected early in the season. They've had a lot of rookies that have been contributing big minutes. So, Michael, I'd love your take on this. You hear about the rookie wall all the time. Does it feel like the Seattle defense is kind of starting to hit that wall? I mean, you have these guys who played 11 games in college with multiple bye weeks, a big break before their bowl game, and now you're playing week after week after week against grown men. It feels like those rookies are starting to grind down on the Seattle defensive side.
And it shows up in the fourth quarter, right? They haven't played really well in the fourth quarter. It shows up on third down defense. It shows up really in terms of points per play. They haven't. And I know that they haven't played like these elite offenses, but yet people have been able to move the football on them effectively. And, you know, the Raiders go up there and run for 270 and throw for 270. You know, so they haven't been able to take one thing away, which is the real issue. And I agree, when you're playing a lot of young players, the season wears on them. I mean, their tongues are hanging out of their mouth after week eight because they're like, wait a minute, this is way longer. Because the practices are harder than the games in pro football.
The attrition point is a tremendous point by Samich there, Michael. I just wanted to follow up. You know, in college, even with lesser opponents, sometimes you have, quote unquote, a week off there. We go from 16 to 17 games in the NFL. That attrition, you mentioned practices being tough, but just week after week, that has to wear on players. Great point about the young defense there with Seattle, Michael.
Yeah, no doubt. It's not only is it physically taxing, it's mentally taxing. Another game plan this week. Oh, we got to play on Thursday. You know, oh, we're not doing this right. And then all of a sudden, your fundamentals and your techniques, which you're relying on to help you, dissipate and they fall away.
You always think when our Monday is our Friday, but Michael works on Wednesdays, but we come back on Thursday. And when we come back, I'm like, man, that was a quick weekend. How about for these players that turn around and play a football game on Thursday night? It really, especially this late in the year, as to why you saw with Steve Mackinnon and his advanced numbers, the home teams have an edge as these primetime Thursday games progress into later in the year. Okay, next one up, Mike Samich, you've got the Lions and Jets. You're going to go over the posted total of 44.5.
This is an interesting one. I mean, you've seen this total. This total opened at 50. And because of the quarterback news, possibly getting some Zach Wilson, possibly getting some Joe Flacco on the Jets side, possible weather issues, the number went down and down and down. Now we're sitting here at 44.5, 5.5 under the original open. This is kind of the breaking point to me. Once it went under 45, I kind of like the over in this spot. If you look at what these two teams have done, you kind of look for a comp game. To me, this is the Jets versus the Vikings again. In that game, you saw a 27-22 final score, but that didn't even tell how much offense there was in that game. You had seven field goals kicked. You had the Jets, who had multiple opportunities in the game, threw an interception in the red zone, had a turned it over on downs in the red zone. They could have put up a lot more points against that Vikings team. Now we're starting to hear that Mike White is going to play, or looks like he's going to play on Sunday. The weather, it's supposed to be 44 and sunny, a little bit cold, but no wind. So both of those factors have been ruled out, and this total hasn't popped back up. I originally had this thing around 46.5. So at 44.5, I think the over is the right side to look at here for a Lions offense that is good and a Lions defense that is not, and a Jets team that's starting to show that they can move the ball with Mike White. So I think this one's totaled a little bit too low, especially with the move. I'm going to play back at that move and go with the over of 44.5 here on Sunday.
You know, I thought the Jets, Mike, I thought the Jets offense, the second half, they take the opening kickoff and they actually run it down the field. And if they don't fumble, I think they're going to beat Buffalo. Now, I think the weather was a little bit misleading in the game. I think the weather impacted the teams. But, you know, look, I think this Jet team with White, there's a sense they get their skill players going. Wilson looks good. Moore's playing. You know, Corey Davis is back, which I think they desperately need. They didn't protect very well, which is why White got the crap beat out of them. And they're going to have to do a better job. But Detroit's not this elite pass rushing team. I do think they'll move the football in Detroit. I really do.
Yeah, it's just kind of a tale of two different stories. If you got an in-division game in weather that they're all hyped up for, you kind of expect those to produce unders, and now you have a out-of-conference game with a defense that is significantly weaker. You mentioned the pass rush. That's not one of Detroit's strengths. White should have a little more time to hang in there. And Garrett Wilson's really turned out to be a good weapon on the outside there for the Jets as well, once he's gotten rolling. So I like this Jets offense. I actually like this Jets team quite a bit. I think they can be dangerous to get into the playoffs. And they have a shot at winning a game. They can keep games close with the defense when they need to. But in this spot, it just feels like you're going to see points from both of these teams. This is the lowest total on the season from any Lions game as well. Again, I get we have a weather concern and a quarterback concern, but I think that line has gone a little too far to the under. And so we'll go back over 44.5.
Yeah, my only concern about this game, Michael. Patrick, my only concern about this game is Mike White. If he's not healthy, we're getting Zach Wilson. And you're going to take ticket and you're going to be like mush. You're going to rip it up as soon as Zach Wilson walks on the field. You're just going to rip up the ticket and say, I lost it.
No precipitation. Go ahead, Mike, please.
Real quick, from a gambling perspective, right? I agree with you, Mike. I'm worried about any Zach Wilson I bet on. I don't want any part of that. I don't think the total moves that much if they officially announce him out. I think you're able to play back for half or three quarters or however much you wanted your bet on the over here or on the under here. If you do officially hear he's back in, I think you're seeing a move from 44.5 to 44 or something like that. So you can almost buy back some of your risk.
Yeah, I agree. Great point.
Tremendous point. 38 degrees, no precipitation, maybe 10 to 12 mile an hour winds there in Jersey. The Lions 9-4 to the over. I just have a minute and a half, so let's get a quick cap. You like Cincinnati laying the 3.5 at Tampa Bay?
As teams just going in different directions here. I think Cincinnati has played phenomenally better over the last few weeks. The offensive line has come together much better. And then you just look at this Tampa team. They can't move the football against anybody. Cincinnati's defense has been good. This Bucs season is just a lost season at this point. They need this game to try and stay in the division, but you're getting a significantly better team in Cincinnati laying sub 4 points in a spot where I expect them to just take care of business. Cincy needs this one too. They want to win the division. And to do that, these are the type of games that they need to pick up. I don't think that they can, that simply put, I don't think Tampa can score with Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati has their way on offense, and that is just an awful spot for Tampa.
It's an overthink game, Mike. You're overthinking it if you're taking the Bucs, because one team's playing really well, the other team's not playing well, and you're overthinking it, and you're letting the Brady magic of the past affect your handicap. I agree with you 1,000%.
Tremendous information from Mike Somich today. Again, the play tonight, just want to get it out here. 49ers rushing as a team go over 148.5 tonight on a prop. Thank you, Somich. Appreciate you. We'll talk
to
you
Mike.
Next week.
Appreciate
okay?
you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
There he goes. Does a great job. The triumphant return of Mike Palm is next. We've got the Palm Pressing 3, and we'll hear about his travels as well. Look forward to it.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, it's the bowl betting guide. You have to be a pro. VSiN.com/subscribe. Again, bowl season underway tomorrow. It's completely different than the regular season, so make sure you check it out. Picks on every bowl game, power ratings for every team, bowl betting strategy, and I saw it in the daily newsletter today, which is free. You can go to VSiN.com and just enter your email address. But we've got a bowl picks page specified for you with the best bets, the conference trends, the stats, everything. So make sure you go check it out right now. VSiN, and then to get the guide, it's VSiN.com/subscribe. Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher. We now head to Circa and welcome in our buddy. I just got the script for Palm's Pressing 3, which will come up in about 11 minutes. And I have to tell you, the extensive work my man puts into it is really exhaustive, and we appreciate it as we welcome back Mike Palm. We missed you last week.
Well, I missed you. I missed Patrick and Michael. I have one question coming back. How does Will Hill have Lombardi line gear and I don't?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I wish I had more Lombardi line gear. We got like one order. I think that's what happened, and that was it. And then we never were able to get in the store. We have to take that up with Len Mead. We had a town hall meeting yesterday. I think we got to take it up with him, see if we can get something done here.
Yeah, it's almost as ludicrous as the kid buying an 8-bedroom house in Birmingham, Michigan, but that's okay. Bill 80 just had a higher support staff. The subscriptions to become a pro rolling in to get his other two picks.
Love it.
I can't. Anyway, how was your travel? Can you fill us in? I know you were out Michael's way. Did you have a nice time, Mike Palm? Fill us in.
It was nice. It was, mid-40s and raining the whole time. I did get to go after the board meeting. I wandered over to the Cap Center because I wanted to see the William Hill Sportsbook, the only one inside an arena in the U.S., and it happened to be Georgetown was playing Siena that night. So for $17, I got a seat about 10 rows up midcourt to what it was actually a pretty – good and competitive basketball game. I'm glad you can't bet on Georgetown there because I would have taken the six and the Hoyas won by seven.
Yeah, my man, the head coach of Siena, I mean, he was I talked to him after the game. He was really disappointed. He thought they should have won that game. What were your thoughts?
They were up. They were up six, and Georgetown went on a 12-0 run over a minute and a half with about 10 minutes to go. And that just turned the game, and then Georgetown had control from that point. Siena actually led for more of the game than Georgetown did.
So the travel has concluded. You make your triumphant return here. What's been on your mind this week? Is there something in particular that stands out? I just mentioned the bowl guide. We've got the bowl season started. I'm sure it's busy at Circa, no?
Well, it's very busy. We have this Derek and Mike's holiday invitational this weekend. It's our first annual one. It was Derek's idea. He came up with it in mid-October. It's a $100,000 blackjack tournament, Patrick and Michael. And we invited a number of our top players to come in. 11 accepted. And then there's a provisional VSIN table also. It starts tonight at 8 p.m., consisting of Paulie Howard, Amal Shaw, and Sean King. The winner of that table gets into the field of 12. Now, we play four rounds of blackjack. First place gets 20,000, second place 15, third is 12,500, fourth is 10, fifth is 7,500, and sixth through 12th is 5,000. But here's the kicker. The payout is you get that in the form of a Super Bowl future, and it's a draft starting with first place. It's at 7 p.m. on Saturday night. The guy that finishes first has a $20,000 future. He picks, let's say he picks the Eagles. Next guy's on the clock, 60 seconds. $15,000 future, he can't pick the Eagles. So a team can only be chosen once. I think it'll be terrific. They'll be filming at VSIN, and then after people make the picks, they're going to come in here and sit with Matty Humans, and he'll have a few questions for each of the contestants. At least one of the VSIN personalities will be in. If any of the other 11 don't show, then two will get in or three will get in. So it should be a fun time.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds like a lot of fun.
You guys are so creative. They're constantly coming up. And by the way, you said one table is going to be Howard, Shaw, and King. I'd love to be a fly on the wall eavesdropping on that combo, Mike Palm.
Yeah, well, it would have been Stormy, but she's got to cover a bowl game tomorrow, so she can't be here for all of the rounds. So Amal got in the back door and watched him just sneak up there here and win this thing for $20,000. He changed his plans. He was going to fly to L.A. Saturday afternoon. He moved his trip for a shot at the glory.
Yeah, I mean, how's he doing in the circuit contest? He said last week that he was kind of fade away. Did he get back in it again? Is he going?
I don't know. I really don't try to follow it. I know my friend Mike Palmieri that owns the Dairy Queen in Niagara Falls. He was in sixth place. I think Amal's team fell out of the top 10, but I'm not sure. He could update that on his show. I don't get too involved until like the last 3 weeks.
And then, Mike, there's 30 left in Survivor.
What a week of carnage starting out with that unbelievable game at SoFi. I mean, that really started it rolling. 11 on the Raiders. I feel so badly for those 11 people. Everybody talks about the batted ball penalty after the sack. How about the car interception before the half? And how about going offsides in the middle of the line on 4th and 3? The Rams are punting the ball away down 13 with 12 minutes to go. That's the game right there.
Yeah.
And then we had... Then we had.
Don't bring it up, Mike. That game was a sore subject. It wasn't a great couple of days. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, but the Panthers did well. The Seahawks, speaking of the Panthers, were the most picked. They get 15 out. And then the Titans, who couldn't stop Jacksonville, 12 out. So we went from 70 to 30. These big favorites now, there's very few people who have them left. So now you're going to see a lot of teams that are 3, 4, 4.5 point favorites. I think the most popular pick out of the 30 this week, and 23 people have them available, will be on Sunday Night Football, will be the Washington Commodores.
Wow, you think so, right?
I do because nobody has any. A lot of these teams, nobody has the Bills. One person has the Cowboys. Two people have the Chiefs. So it's going to be one of these other teams that you have to choose.
Yeah.
Man,
I would hate to put all my marbles. I would hate. I mean, I know, but it's hard to beat it. You know, they shouldn't have beat them the last time. I mean, I don't know what the line. I mean, at 4.5 in the circuit contest, those numbers just came out. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to take the Giants for. I mean, you got to think it's going to be a 3-point game.
Well, yeah, but in Survivor, I think they tied on the road, and then they didn't have to play last week where the Giants did. By the way, Jason Wright, the president of the Commanders, was a keynote speaker at our board meeting. He's a very impressive young man and a tremendous speaker. Four people have the Packers left. I'm sure all four of them will use them on Monday night, Lane 7 at home to the Rams.
Yeah, that's the one mm-hmm. you got to use. Yep. Yep, no doubt.
Yeah, Jason Wright is the president of the Commodores, has an uphill battle with what's happening inside the walls there.
You know,
in D.C.
They've turned over since he took over. They've turned over 62% of the staff organizationally. The staff, while at the same time increasing their suite sales. And the story he has to tell, he comes into a really difficult culture. And, of course, the ownership situation is looming over everybody. As Michael says, who wants to be the partner? I know just a few minutes left in this segment, but the most, I think, important thing or impactful thing that happened this week, Michael, and I know he was a friend of yours, was the passing of Mike Leach, who, yeah. remember, started out with this air raid in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, at Iowa Wesleyan with Hal Mumme.
Mm-hmm. That's right. He did, and he credits Mumme. And then, as I said earlier, he kind of did such a great job adapting it. I mean, think about the jobs Mike Leach had. Lubbock, Pullman, you know, and then Starkville. I mean, these are not, you know, they're not made. As Bill Parcells would say, they're still angle parking in some of those towns. I mean, it's not like perfect. It's so it's amazing that, and yet he was able to win in all of them.
He never had a losing season in Lubbock. And the great Cliff Kingsbury in his six seasons there, the best finish he had in the Big 12 was fifth. Think about that.
And I think it was with others' recruits because Kingsbury's career there got worse as the seasons progressed. But, you know, you have a very Leach-type vibe to you in the sports betting. Like, in our space, you're kind of like the pirate, the Mike Leach. You think differently. You're irreverent. Do you like that, Mike Palm?
Well, that's a nice way of putting it. Mike North, who was in Matt Heumann's football contest and the, you know, legendary radio personality in Chicago, I thought he had a great tweet. He said, in all of his years of covering sports, the only other person with as unique a personality as Mike Leach was Al McGuire.
Yeah. Al McGuire. Al McGuire. Here's a great Al McGuire story. True story. Al McGuire lands in Milwaukee. He's going to be named the head coach of Marquette. He goes to the press conference. He tells the equipment guy, hey, look, go find me a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, buy it. Guy goes out, comes back about 4 hours later, says, I found a house. He buys it, lived in the house the rest of his life in Milwaukee. Now, you know, I mean, think about that for a minute. I mean, think about that. This is without Zillow or about Reddit. I mean, this is like just the guy went and found it.
Yeah, McGuire, I've heard some amazing stories about him.
That's a great comparison North had. That's really great. I mean, because I love the McGuire stories. I love all of them. I've heard a lot of them. We had a guy that I worked with at the Browns who was his PR director. That's where I learned so many of the stories. They're tremendous.
I remember, Michael, on the ABC team for a few years there after McGuire retired. What a great three-man basketball team. They had Dick Enberg, Al McGuire, and Billy Packer was that three-man team, you know.
So good.
That is.
Yeah, so good.
Enberg, Packer, and McGuire is about as good as it gets for a three-man booth. I would agree with you there. Okay. Well, we've had some time to think. Our appetites have been whetted because Mike Palm wasn't here last week. So when we come back, it's Palm's Pressing 3. I've had a preview. They're pretty damn good. Also, we'll
I don't
out
look. Just so the record,
Michael
I will
doesn't
not
look. And this is important because he's just reacting off the cuff. Also, we'll find out from Mr. Palm what's happening behind the book there at Circa tonight for Thursday night. We're back.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, it is betting's premier loyalty program, and that's BetMGM. They hook you up with rewards, so you can earn BetMGM reward points and convert them to MGM reward points. Again, free bets, airfare, travel, plays, anything you want. It's a really cool system BetMGM has set up. Anytime you make a bet, you accrue points. BetMGM.com, the reconfigured app. Download it, BetMGM. 21 years or older. If you have somebody that has an issue, it's 1-800-GAMBLER. We're back. Michael Lombardi there. Mike Palm hanging out. Mr. Bon Vivant there at Circa. And, of course, VSIN. I'm Patrick Maher. So let's get to it. We wait for it every week. It's Palm's Pressing 3, an opportunity for Mike Palm to stretch out a little bit here. And remember, Michael Lombardi does not know what's coming. He's reacting number one.
Jalen Hurts, Michael, the current MVP favorite, was the 53rd pick of the 2020 draft. 27 spots after Jordan Love, who the Packers traded up to pick 26th while still employing a multiple-time MVP. At the time, Philly got a quick C, or worst draft grade, for selecting a gadget quarterback in the second round on the heels of signing Carson Wentz to a huge extension. There were even snickers and laughs when the Eagles dubbed themselves a QB factory after the Hurts pick. The only ones snickering now are the Eagles. Unlike Lamar Jackson, nobody shouted from the rooftops that Hurts was underdrafted. In fact, quite the opposite. So the question is this: what is to be learned from the Hurts case going forward? And why is the evaluation of quarterbacks so darn tough by peoples whose livelihoods depend on it?
Well, I think this. I think that, and I was one of those people that were not in the Hurts camp because he couldn't throw the ball. But what I've learned from watching the Eagles, and I admire what they've done, is they have alignment. So they drafted a guy, and they took him because they had a quarterback. I think they took him as a gadget. I think they took him as somebody, let's see what we have. But what separated them from most teams is once they learned who they had as a person, hard worker, dedicated, they then crafted an offense that fit what he did. They changed. They weren't going to run the Wentz offense or the Doug Peterson offense. They created the Oklahoma offense for Philadelphia. The lesson to learn here is if you're going to draft a quarterback, let's take Jordan Love. The next question is, what offense are we going to run for Jordan Love? How will we develop Jordan Love? What will we do with Jordan Love? How will Jordan Love operate? No one takes and answers the next four questions. They just say, we'll take him, and they hope they've got a savior. They hope the Red Sea is going to part. And I think it's a lesson to learn for all of us. First of all, not a lot of people can evaluate the quarterback. But if you can evaluate the quarterback, very, very few can write down what offense this player would excel in. And I'm not talking about West Coast. I'm talking about specifically writing down what will this player do in an offense. So for me, if you draft Lamar Jackson, you're going to run under center, bootlegs, nakeds, all the kind of play action passes. I see him playing under center. I see him in shotgun. I don't want to make it a drop back game. I want to make it a play action game. But that vision never has occurred in Baltimore, which is why we've seen so much up and down. I think you credit Philly with their vision and then their ability to play or develop.
To Mike Palm's point, Jalen Hurts at DraftKings minus 175 to win the MVP. That's number one. Palm's Pressing 3, number two.
Michael, if you're in charge of Denver, what are you doing this offseason? You couldn't have dreamed that the defense will have played this well, yet your investments in head coach and quarterback were colossal failures, and you're tied at the hip to Russell Wilson. Who would be your top three coaching candidates, and will Brian Flores be a hot name again this offseason?
I think Flores will be a hot name again this offseason, but my top coaching candidates would be the opposite of what people think you need to do. The problem with Denver is they lack toughness. They have no toughness at all. So I would hire a defensive coach. I don't want to hire somebody who only sees defense. I would hire a CEO coach who's a defensive guy, who could understand how to build toughness within the building, knowing that we are going to have to answer those same questions that the Eagles answered on Jalen Hurts for Russell Wilson. See, they take Russell Wilson and they don't even understand what he can and can't do. They didn't realize he ran for 183 yards and doesn't want to move around anymore. They took Russell Wilson and said, well, he's a plug-and-play player. No, he's not. Well, he can run the West Coast. No, he can't. So now all bets are off. If I'm the general manager of the Broncos, I'm walking into Russell and having his agent there and saying, look, you got your money. We're going to have to manage this. We're going to fix it. Either you cooperate or why don't you just opt out of your deal? Because we're going to build a program that's going to highlight defense, that's going to highlight the running game, going to highlight the kicking game, and try to minimize you from hurting the team. You can do it really well. We'll make you look great. You get all the credit when we do it. But that's what we're going to do. But it starts with toughness. And we got to go find a coach who can build a program, who could see the game from 35,000 feet, who could understand that it's three dimensions for us to win. It's not all is lost because of the contract, but we got to fix it, and we can only fix it by emphasizing off the kicking game and defense and toughness.
Martindale, Flores would be good possibilities.
Be ideal. Palm. I see. You need somebody to see the game from a global standpoint who's going to demand from the coaches that we develop talent. Because remember now, we don't have any draft picks. So we gave them all to Seattle. So how are we going to get better? Well, we get better in player development. We're going to have to develop some of these young players. We're going to have to find a fourth rounder that we make into a second rounder. We're going to have to find a sixth rounder that becomes a starter. We're going to have to find a free agent who could come and play. We have to develop talent. We just are not going to, as Al Davis would say, make sure these coaches understand their high school coaches, that we just can't replace the players every 2 weeks. We got to develop talent.
Mike Palm looks satiated with the answer to number two. How about Palm's pressing three?
The Chargers on Sunday night, with Allen and Williams on the field together, a rarity, gave a taste of what the possibilities could be, and they were still missing Bosa and Darwin James. Have you ever seen a team where marquee players miss so many games with mysterious ailments? You speak of culture all the time, Michael. Is there a culture with the Chargers where players are either allowed to drag out injuries or aren't being healed quickly enough, let alone sustain so many injuries in the first place? This has been going on for years there and with many of the same players and never changes. If they ever had a healthy roster, they'd be scary in spite of their head coach.
Well, I think they would have to be, first of all, to play football and to endure football, you have to go through tough times. And you got to have toughness and you got to practice hard. And when the teams that try to avoid injuries by not practicing, they always end up with injuries. They always end up the team that hurt. It's like a boxer who doesn't want to spar and then he's going to go fight a championship fight. And so, yeah, they're missing a lot of players. Their players, besides being injured, don't play to the level that we think they're playing. I mean, Derwin James has not played to the level that the media makes him out to play to. Bosa does at times, but he doesn't. Khalil Mack isn't playing to the level that we would think. So they have to start and really do a better job of developing and harvesting the talent and building toughness within their players. I think it's one of the things that's missing with the team. I think it's too easy to say, don't worry about it. You don't have to go. I think that word is bad. I think ultimately, for you to be great at anything, you have to sacrifice. You have to go through hard times. And if you're not willing to go through those hard times, you're never going to get better. You're never going to be able to rub iron against iron. And I think that's part of the problem with the Chargers. And then their coach is also part of the problem because he doesn't do it. He thinks everything's analytical when, in fact, toughness matters. If Miami would have walked in there and said, we're going to run this ball down your throat because I'm Mike McDaniel and I'm the most brilliant run game coordinator that NFL has ever seen in football before. I can run the ball on anybody. That's what they said at my press conference. But no, they went in there to throw the ball because they wanted to prove to America that Tua is better than Justin Herbert. They wanted to prove to America that they made the right pick. And what they proved was 216 yards.
Well, I feel blessed. I have the Palm script for Palm's pressing three. You can see it right there. This is Dostoevsky. I mean, this is Poe. This is on Camus. I mean, this is well written, Mr. Palm. So good job. Great answers from Mike, as Michael Lombardi as well. Are you going to get to three with San Francisco? Because it looks like you're even on the Vigorish. They're at 3.5.
I tell you where our decision is now. People bet Seattle on the money line, but laid the 3.5 with San Francisco. So, and almost decision on the total. So we'll see as we get closer to the game.
It's 3.5 in the contest, Mike. Yep. I was surprised you put it at 3.5. Yep. I thought that would be a 3. Not that a lot of people in the contest play the Thursday night games because you have to put your picks in too early. Yeah.
Almost nobody does in the millions. I just want to say this about Purdy. And, you know, I'm from the state of Iowa. People keep talking about Mr. Irrelevant like he wasn't. After Purdy's junior season, Michael and Patrick, his odds in the market to be draft a top 10 draft pick were minus 150 to minus 160 in the market. Think about that. There were odds on him to be the overall number one pick. And so
why are we surprised when quarterbacks that go later play well? It's proven the NFL can't evaluate. Trey Lance goes early, he starts no games. Josh Rosen, remember that? I mean, come on. Like, at some point, what are we going to do with him when we get him? Nobody answers that. What are you going to do with Bryce Young at 185 pounds soaking wet at 6 feet tall when you draft him number one pick with the worldwide leader just announced the other day that he's going to be? What are you going to do with him?
People ask me, what do you think Purdy will do? I said, well, he's going from Matt Campbell To Kyle Shanahan, you tell me what you think he's going to do.
Yeah, he had a terrible senior year under Campbell, who is, yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, you're the best, the Mike plays, Palm. Thank you.
Mike Palm, seriously, thank you. Appreciate all your work that you put into the show.
Send me some gear. I need some gear.
Yeah, I need some, too. I'll send you some when I get it.
Let's fill up the VEASAN store.
Let's do a GoFundMe account, Patrick.
That's a hell of a show. You guys have a great day. Big Bets is next.
Thanks, guys.